Good afternoon and welcome to the third episode of the Pedagogy Matters podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to bring to the fore some key topics of conversation in relation to learning and teaching, to discuss, to break them down, and to really provide some snippets, advice, guidance as to how we can integrate these into daily practice. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Susanna Wilson, an English teacher from Argyll College. Susanna, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
Great, thanks. How are you finding the third lockdown so far? Challenging?
I think it's been easier in some ways to get into a rhythm because we've done it before. And I think that's true. I think that's true for me. I think it feels like it's true for my students. And perhaps most importantly for me, it's true for my kids as well. So I feel like this is something we're getting used to, and we're getting a handle on how to organise ourselves.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. When people say we're getting used to this way of working, I'm not sure if we are. I just think we're just surviving or adapting. But who knows? But yeah, it's a really interesting time, really challenging as well. And so I think it's interesting to kind of probably start with, I guess, maybe your background as a lecturer, if that's okay with you. So do you mind kind of tell us a very brief overview as to kind of who you are, what you've done, and where you work?
I started teaching at secondary level. I started teaching in secondary schools around Manchester. I'm an English teacher. And then I moved both up to Scotland and into further education, FE, and higher education. And I've been here now for maybe 6 years, teaching all sorts of different things, but normally mostly to do with communications or English, and a bit of teacher education as well.
Oh, fantastic. And I guess, what have you found different about FE compared to secondary? You know, it's a real different landscape. And I think you're one of, I'm going to say, the minority who's gone from one to the other. I guess, what are your views on that? Kind of, what are the differences, and what's kind of really great about FE?
That's an interesting question. I think my move from secondary into FE, I think it happened at the same time as my move from face-to-face classroom teaching all the time to an online and a blended way of delivery. Argyll College is part of the University of the Highlands and Islands, and it's made up of a number of different smaller local learning centres, we call them. So they're spread across Argyll, and under normal conditions, students and teachers come to one of the local learning centres. So you might have a cohort of students all in the same learning centre, and the teacher might be there face to face, but the tutor might be in another local learning centre, or there might be a mix. You might have a mix of face to face and sort of online students. And in normal conditions, we'll go into those local learning centres and then basically use video conferencing software and the virtual learning environment to deliver the teaching. And now, obviously, with the pandemic, with lockdown, that's changed again into our own homes and the like. But for me, that move to FE coincided with that move away from face to face. So I think it's difficult to say what I find particularly Absolutely. Special about FE.
Absolutely. No, I think it's really interesting, though, and it shows that, you know, this approach to delivery or learning, you know, depending on different perspectives, you know, it isn't necessarily new, but it's a very different concept right now of the fact it's forced upon everybody.
For me, the difference was moving from face to face to sort of more technology aided, if you like, was the spontaneousness of maybe it's because I was in secondary, or maybe it's because it was face to face, I don't know, but of getting people to write things down on post-it notes and stick them on walls around them, that kind of thing, which I'm going to say was done more spontaneously, had to be planned in advance and had to be altered to meet that sort of dispersed delivery.
No, you're absolutely right. And we're talking kind of previous podcast around relationships and how to build those relationships. And yeah, we're not really going to digress on that today, but yeah, it's really fascinating the real differences between true face-to-face or pure face-to-face teaching and then a hybrid approach of where you might have half in front or half at home. You know, so it's really interesting. But of today, we're kind of really going to focus on feedback. Mm-hmm. I know feedback's a real interest of yours.
It is.
Rightly so. And I think, so that's what we'll look at today, is different types of feedback or aspects or innovations that, that you and maybe other colleagues have really looked at in terms of feedback?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of where I want to start here is I know from my own experience that, that, you know, feedback, it can be amazing, but we've got to find a way of students really engaging with that and really finding it useful as opposed to just looking at what the outcome. I know when I was kind of looking again in preparation for this podcast, a bit of research I came across was that the understanding of feedback has evolved from just information given to students mm-hmm. about work to actually being an integral part of their teaching and learning that contributes to their overarching student experience. And that's from Dawson et al. So yeah.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts or what are your interests or what are your views around feedback and different methods? And yeah, so what about you?
Well, I think starting from what you've just said, I think there is this, or for lots of people, students, staff alike, I think there can be a fundamental sort of misunderstanding that the act of giving feedback or the act of receiving feedback is itself a really useful thing. And I'm not totally sure it is. I think feedback only becomes useful when you do something interesting with it or you do something useful with it. I think me having given feedback to my students, that in itself is useless. And I think my students having downloaded from the virtual learning environment, downloaded my feedback, that in itself doesn't really help. It doesn't help the learning. What is really important, I think, about feedback is that you then do something with it. And that's where the magic happens. If my students were listening to this, which I don't think they will, but if they were, there you are. I've said it out loud and not just to you guys. It's actually what I believe. You've got to actually do something with the feedback that you receive.
No, I totally agree with that. And I know from my experience of teaching many, many learners in my old world of sport, where they may have had 25 assignments a year, mm-hmm. where each assignment had individual bit of feedback. I, as a teacher, wrote that up for a ridiculous amount of students, take that up, the feedback, they looked at it, went in the file, didn't really do anything with it. A small proportion did, they interrogated the feedback,
mm-hmm.
and that was on them as opposed to the process. So yes, I think that's really interesting. So in terms of your experience, how has this shaped your practice or what strategies or methods have you tried to develop to really put feedback at the heart of this process?
Well, I think first of all, you have to make sure that the feedback that you give is useful. And that means all sorts of things, doesn't it? Maybe it means that the way that I have planned my delivery of whatever it is I'm teaching, there needs to be a progression in terms of the sort of assessments that I'm asking people to do. There needs to be that progression so that the feedback that I give from assessment number one can be clearly incorporated into assessment number two and then assessment number three. And there needs to be that sort of that really obvious progression from task to task in order for students to make use of the feedback. So that's one thing that I will try and do. I'll try and make it, and I suppose in English, in some ways you could say that's easy, because even just in terms of looking at writing style or something like that, you can say, well, that's clearly relevant. But maybe it needs to be more than that. Maybe it needs to be that the actual skills or the capacities or whatever it is that you're developing, there needs to be a really clear progression so that you can say where you got the feedback for this point in assessment one, this is how it's useful for assessment two, and you can build on that. So I think that's the first thing. Another thing that I've started doing recently, I've started giving time within my lesson time for learners to use the feedback.
That's a good point. My question after the first point is, how do you do it? You know, I think we all agree that it's really important to make feedback link from assessment to assessment or from task to task or from week to week, but it's the how and the methods of doing that. So yeah, tell us a bit more about that.
Well, that, yeah, I I think I would previously have thought that the working with the feedback should be done in the student's own time, maybe, or I thought it just magically happened, actually, before I started thinking about this. But now I don't think it's a waste of class time and maybe people will disagree with me, I don't know, but I don't think it's a waste of class time for me to say, right, for the next half an hour, 20 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it is, I would like you to take out that feedback and I would like you to change your answer based on the feedback that I've given. And sometimes I might do that when I've given some individual feedback. So I've asked, you know, I've asked learners to do 10 questions, let's say, and I've given them all individual feedback on those 10 questions. And then I might say, what I would like you to do is go and use that feedback to improve two of those questions. And then I would like you to resubmit them to me. Yeah. I'm fairly clear that I'm not going to necessarily remark those two questions, otherwise I could get myself into a total spiral of never-ending marking, but I will look over it. My students know that I will look over that, and that allows me to then plan whatever we're doing next. It allows me to see if the feedback makes sense, and if they've understood what I have actually meant in my feedback.
I think that's a really interesting point. Can I just jump back maybe 30 seconds where you said actually, well, it's a perceived waste of class time of doing this or not? Absolutely not. So I think if you think of an artist or a bricklayer or anybody with a skilled trade, for example, if they had some corrections to do, they would spend some time actively going back, exploring those corrections, yep, and then making said changes.
Yep.
That's absolutely the same in terms of our learning with our students. You know, that if we identify some errors, we build that time in, we build that space in for the reflection for them to understand, firstly, to kind of break those down, and then secondly, make those amendments. And like you're saying there, whether then you mark those in the same level of detail or it's just that process that they go through, it's fundamental. But again, being critical myself, I've not built that time into my practice before because there's that perception of I haven't got enough time in my day or my curriculum to do this.
Yeah, I think so. And I think as well, it's crucial for me to know if the way I have expressed my feedback actually makes sense. Yeah. If my students have understood what I meant by it, or if they've understood something completely different, which can happen, can't it? I think that's important. That's why I need them to then resubmit. And I think as well, actually asking students to make changes to what they did already, it allows them to see if they've understood properly. It's easy enough to read someone's feedback that they've given you and think to yourself, oh yeah, I'll do that next time. But it's actually in actively making those changes that you know whether or not that did actually make sense, or if you actually need to go and talk to the tutor again. So I can say to them, you're going to spend half an hour working with your feedback. I'm here. I've got your copy, my copy of your work on the screen in front of me. Ask me if you've got questions. And they do.
I think that's great. This wasn't planned actually, but there's an actual link there back to the first podcast on retrieval practice of going back and checking our knowledge and understanding.
Yep.
And if you've got a wrong breakdown those initial links and make those new links and form those new links of learning, you know, which is exactly that process that we're doing there. And I think the second bit, just to really compliment what you're saying there in terms of a bit of research, you know, Winston and Bowd kind of common problems with feedback is one, it's not a focus within course design, which is exactly what we're just talking about there. And then secondly, and I know we'll touch upon this, but the forms and methods of documenting the feedback can impair its quality. And yep. I've come from many institutions, and this is not being critical at any institution. We always have a set feedback form or a method that we complete, and I say we as lecturers, to satisfy either the college or typically the award organisation. But actually, we don't have to do it in that way, but we need to think a bit more practically about what the purpose and method of the feedback is. Which I know is something you've done a bit of work on as well, isn't it, in terms of different methods of feedback to engage students and to capture that?
Yeah, I have. I've done a little bit of trying out and trying to track the impact of video feedback. We did a project at Argyle College, which involved, I think it involved five tutors, all using video feedback at different levels and on different courses, and the idea was for all of the tutors, we marked the work as usual, so we all gave written feedback, and then we used that written feedback and we used screen capture software to get a copy of that written feedback onto our computer screens, and then have our little cameras in the top right hand corner of the screen, it was, and used that video software to then talk through the key points of that written feedback. And the idea, it wasn't there to replace the written feedback, it was there to supplement it and to sort of to make sure that the key messages really sort of got through to learners. Go on, you had a question already.
I'll say that, I think that's just to bring it to life, isn't it? It's really kind of to bring off that bit of paper, I'm going to say the passion, the information, or the kind of the spark around actually what's fantastic or what needs to improve about our work. That's the purpose of the verbal element.
It's useful for a few reasons. There's research that suggests that to learners, it feels like you're having a one-to-one conversation with your tutor, and you're able to hear their enthusiasm, like you say, to really sort of understand exactly what your tutor thinks about your work. Another thing about it is that it allows you to point your mouse or to highlight something on, just like you would if you were sitting down next to somebody doing like a one-to-one face-to-face meeting. And the other thing that was dead interesting when we did it here, our learners said that, or some of our learners said that, having the video feedback helped them to believe us when we said that something was good. And I hadn't anticipated that at all. That was dead interesting. Like, they could hear the enthusiasm in our voices when we said, this bit's really good, and we were able to give reasons. And they said, because we were speaking, it changed the way we said it, but it also changed what we said. And that we gave more details about where things were good. And that gave them the motivation or whatever it is to then carry on working with the things that needed the development.
No, I think that's kind of really useful. I know when we talk kind of prior to this podcast around really chat around feedback, it wasn't all positive either. You know, doing some of those methods were quite time intensive. And obviously at times there's barriers to technology.
Yep.
And I guess what we're trying to get across within here, even just with our conversation, is, look, it doesn't necessarily matter about the method of providing that feedback or whatever works for you. Although I've seen some incredible applications of verbal or video feedback that actually were a lot more efficient than sitting down and writing or sitting down and typing. So like you say, I know there's some different lectures from my different experiences who found methods of doing that, as in 90 seconds per bit of work.
Yeah.
Where if they were handwriting, they couldn't write half as much detail. And like you say, those added benefits of detail. So really, it's about kind of what works for individuals and for lecturers to try and get this across. You know, whether that's handwritten or whether that's verbal or whether that's a video, that's in your gift. But I think that the fundamentals here are around how to make it effective and how to make it relevant and bring it to life in that process.
Yeah. One thing we realise with the video feedback is that, and it makes total sense when you think about it, receiving feedback is an emotional issue. It really, if you think about a time that you've been waiting for feedback and you get it and you feel like it's a judgment, you feel like it's a judgment on your character sometimes, don't you? Especially if it's super important or whatever it is. So having this video with this little tiny face at the top of the screen, it somehow makes it makes it more worthwhile. It makes it more personal. In some ways, it takes away that feeling of a judgment, and instead you're having a conversation with a real person who's interested in your work. In fact, that's another thing that one student told us. The very fact that we'd spent the time, as she perceived it, making a video, made her feel that it was worthwhile.
It comes back to, again, and this really isn't planned, but it links back to the second video, actually, where you're great teachers, you have a relationship with, you know, fundamentally. You know, it's absolutely a professional relationship. Doesn't mean you like them.
Oh yeah.
That relationship, and this is just a different method of enhancing that relationship, potentially in the current climate where you're not seeing your students face to face or only over a computer screen. And again, it's a perceived effort and that level of detail.
Yeah.
I know we talked a little bit again about your background, and a big belief of you within teaching is about identity and about how you try and instill that within your learners. And I guess it's a different method of, I guess, bringing through your passion for their education within feedback, which the more you unpick it, is a really fundamental part of the process.
It's absolutely vital. I think feedback and assessment, I listened to your first podcast in preparing to have this conversation with you. And one of the things that you were talking about was in the current lockdown, or with all the restrictions, you were talking about that loss of interaction, that loss of engagement with students. And you were talking about that on a personal level. You know, we're teachers. We probably have become teachers and tutors because we like talking to people. We like engaging with people. We've got that personal connection with students and with staff, but with students, you know, hour after hour in our working day. But there's also a loss of interaction on a teaching level, on a pedagogical level. And I think thinking about assessment and feedback helps here as well, because in our usual delivery sort of mechanisms, we're always getting feedback from our learners about how they're doing. We just don't necessarily notice it. So, you know, those body language cues, to put it basically, if someone's got their head on the table in front of us, we know they are not engaged and we know we have to do something about it. Whereas in this way of learning, we lose a lot of that sort of instinctive, maybe, understanding of where our learners are. And I call that assessment as well. That's a form of assessment. We just maybe don't notice it.
Yeah, I think there's some points there, because, yeah, you're right. And again, I used to think back to when I was a lecturer, my contract back in England was 828 hours of delivery, of teaching. You know, and I think that's you lonely by yourself, speaking to students, yeah, and trying to enthuse them and engage them and take them along a journey. Mm-hmm. And like I said, now doing that through a computer screen or different methods, even backwards face-to-face, the feedback's kind of a really important element of that. And as you said then, in terms of the cues that you could have when delivering that feedback subtly to a learner if it wasn't great, or again, subtly to a student, it's fantastic and getting really big help because you know your learners intimately one-to-one professionally, mm-hmm. that's gone. But again, it's a really interesting point there around actual feedback. Still the same. It's just how the method and medium which we do that might well still be the same as how we're having. We just need to build a space for that to be fundamentally important.
Yeah.
Or actually, based on the learning in the last 10 months, how can we do it better? How can we do it in a more intuitive way to really express the successes and developments of our students whilst managing our own workload and not breaking ourselves the computer for hours and hours typing? When actually you go to the screen and your mouse and your highlight and you do whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in that way, I think in normal teaching times, if you like, we don't acknowledge how much assessment we are doing in our usual teaching ways. And I think in this way, when we're planning for teaching using online or blended or whatever the setup is during lockdown, I think if we can think, well, all right, I'm going to deliver this bit of content. Now, how will I know? What are the, we can call it assessment, what are the assessment mechanisms that I'm going to use to make sure that was understood, or to work out the extent to which that was understood? And it is a form of assessment. I just don't think we ever really necessarily called it assessment.
Yeah, I think the feedback, I guess, in a traditional face-to-face classroom is very much continuous. Mm-hmm. You know, you can give little nuggets for students all throughout the sessions and all throughout the day. Whereas now it's, I suppose, again, on reflection, we're providing feedback less, and therefore it's going to be even more impactful and relevant and built into our delivery time to make it more pertinent and useful for students.
Yeah, definitely.
More explicit and conscious.
When you were talking about identity before, I think if, unless we, as teaching staff, unless we think consciously about how we are going to assess in that informal, that formative way, I think unless we start thinking about that, then delivering in this way, it seems really unsatisfying. You know,
it's transmission, isn't it?
It's just exactly. It's just me giving off tons of information, and that's depressing for me because I don't know how it's being sort of received, but it must be depressing for students as well if you just feel like you're just getting this information volleyed at you like tennis balls just sort of flying at you and you can't possibly look at any of them or return any because there's just too much. I think that's depressing. But if you think about your teaching and your style and how you can incorporate assessment into that, I think that makes it a much more positive experience.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And again, I purposely left this bit of research towards the end, you know, because it really kind of summarizes what we talked about. You know, so it's from Malloy et al., which looks at feedback needs necessary to be a learning centered process.
Yeah.
And as such, it's a student's ability to effectively engage with, utilize those processes that need to be given more attention.
Yeah.
And really, that summarizes more, and it's had to be really highlighted and heightened by teaching in a remote capacity in a remote world because of, as you said there, you're absolutely right. In terms of, I'm a big believer on the Inquisitor's great self-marking. Again, how does that really help a learner develop and understand and look at how they've learned and developed unless we build some time in to reflect on that?
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. Again, there's been obviously loads of research out there and feedback, and it's all very different, but a common thread as well is that students often just want to know what they've got wrong and where they got it wrong, which is understandable. You know, we're an efficient millennial culture. We want to spend less time doing anything. But again, it's about getting it wrong, understanding how and why, and then doing something with that.
Yeah.
To build those links in learning. But through all those things done well, it helps develop that identity, it helps develop that rapport, helps develop the student experience and all those different elements there.
Yeah, absolutely. The research also says, if you're thinking about it from that learner-centered approach to assessment, to feedback, the old way of thinking about it, if you like, was that the teacher, the tutor was there to give the feedback, yeah, and the learner was there to receive it, and that was that. Whereas I think there's been a reconceptualization of it towards this idea of the learner actively looking to see how they're doing, to get feedback from multiple places. And one of those places, obviously, is the tutor. And your tutor is a really important source of feedback, but they're not the only one. And so as tutors, our job is to help learners develop the sort of capacities for comparing their work against an exemplar, for example, or compare whatever the thing is that we can do to help our learners judge their own work.
Yeah, how I've phrased in the past is help learners can have their light bulb moment where they get it clicks, but we want them to do that in terms of their own learning.
Yeah.
Oh, I got that wrong because of this. Yeah, I get it. And now I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Great. That's what we build space for. Yeah, I think it's how can we really empower learners and empower colleagues to really focus on feedback and whichever guise that is, to have that desired impact that you've really talked and kind of really talked passionately about for the last 25, 30 minutes.
Well, yeah, to make it worthwhile. It's something we spend extraordinary amounts of time planning for and then doing as teaching practitioners. So, you know, it has to have an impact. It has to have a positive impact. And I suppose, given that we've changed all our working practices recently over the past year, why not consider this one as well?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely kind of right there. And there's some really interesting points to reflect on and consider in your own teaching practice when you listen, is how much time do you spend writing the feedback?
Yeah.
And how much time do you spend really ensuring learners focus on this and do something with it? I've been massively critical myself, and I'm kind of now reflecting. I think I spend far too much time writing and not enough time really making it important. So no, I think that's really, really interesting. Well, Susanna, thank you very much for your time. It's been really fantastic and kind of some really, really interesting points and reflections around, I'm just going to say, feedback more holistically.
Yeah.
We didn't really go into too much detail around the process of how to create the verbal and the written, but that's not really what this was for. It was around the importance of feedback and how and why. So no, thank you very much for your time, and hope that's been really useful.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. It's always interesting to have to think about it before you can talk about it.
No, it is. It's that process where it becomes part of our daily practice just to do what we do.
Yeah.
And as everything, you kind of get in a routine, whether that be the right routine or the wrong routine. But yeah, the conscious effort and application of feedback, I think, is vital. No, fantastic. Thank you, Suzanne.
Ace. Thank you. Bye.